Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Spotlight on Youth. My name is Angela Chang and I'm a staff attorney at the Children's Law Center, Incorporated. Spotlight on Youth is a radio show focusing on social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of youth across the country. Spotlight on Youth is hosted by the Children's Law Center, a not-for-profit legal services organization dedicated to children's rights issues. If you have a question for our guests live on air, you can call 347-994-1149 and push the number 1 on your keypad. You can also type your question to the chat room if you're listening online. Currently, we may be experiencing some technical difficulties with our chat room, but we will do our best to answer your questions as we receive them. Our guests today are Honorable Judge Christopher J. Mailing, Tara Grishup Goodwin, and Rebecca Ballard DiLoretto. Judge Mailing is a circuit court judge in the Kenton County Family Court. He was the first judge elected to the Kenton County Family Court after its inception. He's married to Pat Mailing and proud father to Jennifer and Josh and a proud grandfather. He received his Bachelor of Arts from Bowling Green State University and a Juris Doctor from the University of Cincinnati and is admitted to practice in state and federal courts in both Kentucky and Ohio. He's a member of a number of legal and community organizations, including the Kentucky Bar Association, the Northern Kentucky Bar Association, Chase American Inn of Courts, Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, and Welcome House. His interests are golf and American history. Judge Mailing is one of the leaders of the newly formed Kenton County Status Offender Reform Committee. Tara Grishup Goodwin is the Deputy Director of Kentucky Youth Advocates, where she oversees the juvenile justice, kids count, and economic well-being portfolios. During her eight-year tenure at KYA, Tara has played a key role in state-level policy change, including a passage of graduated driver's license and child booster seat laws, and has renewed KYA's juvenile justice work. Tara serves on the State Advisory Group Subcommittee for Equity and Justice for All Youth. For the past 3 years, Tara has led work group efforts to end the use of secure detention for status offenses and increase high school graduation rates through the Blueprint for Kentucky's Children. Tara received her Master of Public Affairs degree from the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University and Bachelor of Arts from the University of Notre Dame. Tara is a mother of two boys. Rebecca Ballard DiLoretto is the litigation director for the Children's Law Center. She has an extensive background in child advocacy. Rebecca attended Sarah School in Lexington, Kentucky and graduated magna cum laude with a major in American Studies from Amherst College, Massachusetts. After working with Lakota tribes and then Benedictine nuns in South Dakota, Rebecca returned to Kentucky and graduated from the University of Kentucky College of Law in 1985. Rebecca served with the Department of Public Advocacy from the summer of 1984 until June 2008. Her career has spanned appellate, trial, and post-conviction work. She served as post-trial division director for DPA for 10 years and was the first director of the Lexington Public Defender's Office. Rebecca and her husband, Don DiLoretto, have three children. Among her many community activities, Rebecca serves on the boards of Partners for Youth, Kentucky Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Welcome, Judge Mailing, Tara, and Rebecca.
Thank you.
Judge Mailing, could you start us off today by telling us how you became interested in the Status Offender Reform Initiative?
Well, I arrived here in 07, and as time progressed on in handling matters on my docket regarding status offenders, which I do one morning every other week, seemed to grow exponentially to the point that I couldn't get this docket. I should have been done at noon. I was getting done at like 2, 3 o'clock. And as time marched on, instead of shrinking, it kept getting bigger. In addition to that, it grew from just kids who were charged with offenses. It seemed like I was fielding as many contempt charges as I was fielding original charges about things. And we were grappling with especially a habitual truancy problem here in Kenton County. At one point then, I decided to implement a policy that once I got them under orders, if they missed even one time, have them charged with contempt. And, of course, here in Kentucky, with a contempt charge, a juvenile can be picked up and lodged overnight in a detention center, even as a status offender. So that made the docket grow even more. I then had an opportunity to see a presentation by one of my colleagues at a Kentucky Bar annual meeting in which she was highly critical of that type of approach. And she's in the largest county of the state, and they had no status offenders being detained. So it got me starting to think about what were we doing, and was it a smart idea? So then I started picking through every request very carefully, and I started to discover that a lot of the contempt charges were being brought on kids either that were mentally ill, or we had ordered the parents to do certain things with these children. We really had no idea if they did it or not, take them for mental health treatment, take them for medical treatment, get them counseling, demand that they be worked up to see if they needed an IEP, and really the system didn't have a follow-up. And then a lot of cases we started to, if I started drilling down more and more, I'd find that really the case was a neglect or abuse case. It really wasn't a habitual truancy case or whatever. So I finally reached a decision, I'm going to stop signing these pickup orders, except for the extraordinary case when I had a kid who had no mental health problems, no problems at home, no anything, and just didn't go to school. And apparently some people kind of picked up on that, and with the help of the Children's Law Center, and they obtained a grant, we were able to bring Judge Teske in here from Georgia to look specifically at our problem, because at the same time I learned to my surprise, we in Kenton County detained more status offenders than any other county in the state, which really surprised me. And since we're not the largest county in the state, I kind of felt like there's something wrong. We got to do something. Whatever we're doing, it's not the smartest thing. So now we're kind of focused on the issue.
Great. And we'll come back to the community response here in Kenton County. But first, Tara, tell us a little bit about Kentucky Youth Advocates and why your organization decided to be involved in this reform.
Sure. Kentucky Youth Advocates is a nonprofit, nonpartisan child advocacy organization, and we look at children's well-being from a number of perspectives, including education, economic well-being, health, as well as juvenile justice. And one of our signature projects is the Kids Count Project, and each year we produce a county-by-county data portrait of how children are faring in the state. And a number of years ago, we began to start collecting juvenile justice data again, which was something that we had collected in previous years. And in collecting that information and talking with folks, including the Department of Juvenile Justice and various attorneys, we came to be aware that Kentucky was really an outlier in terms of our detention of status offenders as a state. And when we look at the data on children's issues across the board, and sometimes we see, in some cases, we see that being an outlier is a real positive, that we are leading the nation on things. And in other cases, we see, as we did with detaining youth for status offenses, that being an outlier wasn't something that we really wanted to be. And so we also saw within the state, as Judge Mayling alluded to, we saw wide variation across counties in how they were addressing the issue. The largest county in Kentucky does not detain youth for status offenses. And then we have some smaller counties who have rates that far exceed the overall state rate. And so we saw this as an issue that really needed some more attention and needed some discussion. And so we began to look at it in the context of our policy work that we lead. It's called the Blueprint for Kentucky's Children, and it's a number of groups, 100 organizations involved in developing a concise agenda for children's issues. And so we raised that with the Blueprint for Kentucky's Children folks, and they agreed to put it on the Blueprint for Kentucky's Children agenda. And that's really how we've been working on it.
And Rebecca, could you give us a national perspective on status offender reform efforts and also describe where else in the state have reform efforts begin to take place?
Sure, Angela. What's important to know is that for several years, Kentucky has been really in the top three in its detention of status offenders. And as Judge Mayling indicated, we've been at that high number even though the largest school district and county in the state does not incarcerate any children for status offenses. The National Juvenile and Family Court Judges Association voted in 2010 to oppose the incarceration of status offenders for a violation of a valid court order. And the American Bar Association, which is a fairly conservative, really, organization, has stood against the incarceration of children for status offenses. The reason for it has to do with the recognition that this idea we used to embrace in the 80s of scared straight, if you lock them up, you shake them up, that the sociological evidence indicates that doesn't work. All of the juvenile justice data available to us would reflect that locking up children who for non-criminal behavior really pushes them more deeply into the juvenile justice and then the criminal justice system. Some of the efforts that have been going on across the nation include the JDAI, which is funded by CASEY, and that's a Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative that is focused not just to status offenders but to all children in the juvenile and family court arena. In addition, Reclaiming Our Futures, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, has been an excellent avenue for bringing attention to this issue and resources to bear. And as Judge Mayling indicated, and we'll speak more about, Teske, a judge out of Georgia, has a model that we have encouraged judges to embrace here, and Judge Mayling showed leadership in doing that in Kentucky. Elsewhere in Kentucky, where they're considering involving the Teske method and have taken some steps in that direction, includes Judge Wiedersheim in Henderson, Kentucky. So that's far western Kentucky. And in Fayette County, the judges there and the actually Lexington Fayette Urban County Council are looking at helping to support bringing Judge Teske in and using that kind of model in order to try to bring resources to bear. Another type of national approach would be the consideration, as you indicated, Judge Mangling, you recognize that so many of these children had mental health issues, that they really were children who had still had remaining dependency, neglect, abuse issues that needed to be addressed. And in several states, including Florida and Connecticut, they have looked at a model called CHIN that would be a statutory reform, and CHIN stands for Children in Need of Services, where we would bring to bear resources rather than simply, you know, the hammer or the order. One of the things to recognize is that there's an assumption we created a family court, we have given them resources to manage this, and thus, you know, we bring the cases there. And I think Judge Mayling sort of laughs and could speak to that reality.
Sure. Judge, do you want to respond to that?
Well, a few things. First of all, my colleagues and a lot of people involved throughout the Commonwealth with this issue would say that our largest county, Jefferson, has one of the reasons they really haven't detained any youth is they have an abundance of resources and programs which we don't have in a lot of other places in the county. We're in a recession. In Fayette, the county's looking at trying to help to pay for some things. We're not getting that type of approach here in Kenton, as our resources are so strapped. Sometimes, though, having no money becomes a help in a way, because what's happened now in Kenton is our jailer, looking at what he's got to pay per day for status offenders being lodged in the detention center, which we have a regional detention center. He really doesn't have the resources to have that money be spent for that. Therefore, he's real interested in trying to get something done so they aren't in there. So that's an advantage. The thing that, after giving a lot of thought, one of the things that really bothers me, and when Judge Teske was here, I verbalized this then, any adult who's charged with contempt of court is summoned to court and has an opportunity to be heard before they are held or punished, except in extremely extraordinary circumstances. Here in Kentucky, with juvenile status offenders, merely by somebody filing an affidavit saying they violated court orders, they can be picked up and lodged overnight in a detention center, even if it turns out the charges are unfounded. Now, that's just, there's a basic fairness problem. I'm not bothered by having runaway children picked up, because they're endangering themselves, and a lot of the runaways we see in Kenton are not only just from their homes, but because we have some treatment centers for juveniles who are already committed to the cabinet, and they run from those facilities. It's real important we get them picked up and held until we can come up with a plan to place them somewhere where they'll be safe. But this idea that a child violated a court order and therefore they must be picked up before they're even heard on it just is not the right approach, I've concluded. And I'm real hopeful the legislature is going to do something about that. It was my understanding that the Congress was going to do something about that as well, but because we've never enacted a budget, apparently,
right,
that requirement is...
Right.
Not existed. Now, right, Here's the one thing I can tell you for sure. Since we've been working on this issue, my status offender docket has dropped dramatically. And whereas I'm trying to push maybe 30 cases through in a morning, I'm down to maybe 10. And I now, with those 10 cases, can take the time and talk to the child, and talk to the parents, and talk to the public defender, talk to the school district, and talk to the cabinet. And I really now have the time to drill down and find out what's really going on. And another thing that's helped me a lot is, like the Covington school system, I think has started shifting their approach in part and has started filing educational neglect petitions, which are focused on the parents, and not status offense petitions, which are focused on the child. So that a lot of times when we finally drill down, when they do that, and we then send a cabinet worker, we find filthy homes, we find unattended children, we find mentally ill children who are not being taken for treatment or not given their medicine. And so that work by the school district in the last several months has helped us get to the problem, the bottom of problems with a lot of kids. I looked at two again today that Covington brought that I've issued well child warrants on, because we're alarmed by the facts. And we need a cabinet worker to get in their homes and literally look and see. A lot better approach than a status offense where we're putting all the focus on that child and not the parent.
Yeah.
Great to hear. You're already seeing immediate results from a change in practice. Do any of you have any further comments on why you think, I guess, the practice of detaining status offenders has been so prevalent in Kentucky?
I think what we have had in Kentucky is a detention system in place statewide, and that has been the easy, accessible resource that judges see at hand. And we haven't had a similar strong structure in place for providing the support to these children, as you described, who have often mental illness issues or other parenting issues at hand. So I think that that is one piece that we need to be looking at, and it's helpful. It's so helpful to hear how if you move away from the option that is first at hand, you are able to find some resources and handle the cases differently, but certainly that is an area where we can improve as a state. We need to be intentional at making sure we have a statewide system of resources available to support these children and their families.
Well, one thing is, and your listener, we got to make sure the listener understands. When we talk about a status offender, we're talking about things that children do that would never be a crime as an adult. Like they don't go to school, they're beyond control of their parent, they're beyond control of school, or they run away from home. It's a lot different than a juvenile who commits armed robbery, murders somebody, steals. Though nobody here is saying those type of juveniles should not be detained. And in fact, our detention center is built and equipped for those kind of juveniles. They're not part of family court. They're part of district court, and they're part of the Department of Juvenile Justice, not the Cabinet for Families and Children. But unfortunately, when we detain a child who doesn't go to school, they're sent to the same facility where the child who committed armed robbery is. So theoretically, they're separated from them, but they're at the same facility. And the problem is we're using the same technique to deal with that child who doesn't go to school that we use with the child that committed armed robbery. And the data now tells us that the outcomes are quite different with the what we call public offender, our child that robs, versus a status offender who's a child who's doing something that would not be a crime as an adult. So we need to make that distinction. I don't want anybody to think that today we're telling you we don't think any juvenile should be detained at all, because we're not saying that. But we're just talking about this small segment of juveniles.
And I think to add to that, everyone around the table would agree that children who commit status offenses need to be held accountable for the behavior. We're just saying we need to ensure that we're tackling the problem, the true problem, getting to the root of it, and making sure that if they have a mental health issue or if they need an IEP, that those issues are addressed. Because we're not saying either that children shouldn't be attending school.
Well, right. However, one of the things about that is, in the end, it's a parent's job to get their child to school. And it's a natural inclination, I think, for some kids to not want to go, those who don't like school. But, you know, sometimes being a parent's hard work. It's not all easy work. So with a child like that, it's real important. Now, unfortunately, in these hard economic times, we meet the parent who needs to be at work at 6, and they're a single parent, and they've got no family backup whatsoever, so they're literally out the door and at work before the child's supposed to even be up and on their way to school. And I've seen cases like that, where then it becomes a real chore. What are they going to do? And that child doesn't go to school. You know, am I supposed to order the parent to quit work and therefore have the family starve to death? You know, we can't do that. But we need to have resources to help come up with a plan, come up with a way so that we can see that that child comes to school. And that's a small investment for society versus the investment we'll have to make for the child who doesn't go to school and therefore can't get a job and therefore applies for all these public benefits and then has other children, and it's an exponential thing.
And I think, Angela, that that role of the family court judge as a leader in marshaling and redirecting those resources is key.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the question you had asked is how did we get here and in terms of such, you know, large numbers of children incarcerated. And, you know, we created family courts in Kentucky, and the family court judge was the problem solver for all family issues. And there was an idea that they were given abundant resources to manage that. You know, in truth, they weren't necessarily, and it's very complicated to manage all of the issues that they have to face. But what, you know, Judge Teske has brought forward and Judge Mayling has embraced is the idea that the family court judge needs to call forth the community to meet the need in a more effective manner. And redirecting those dollars that we're spending on incarcerating children. We are incarcerating them in facilities where children charged, teenagers, 17-year-olds, you know, charged with homicide are locked up. That's where we're locking up these children. And in many counties, we have locked them up for many days. In Kenton County, there weren't quite as many days as you might see across the state. So that's a lot of money saved, because the county itself, as you indicated, Judge, bears that burden of the cost of incarceration. So those are redirected dollars that our family courts, you know, can provide that leadership about how we need to redirect those dollars to meet the needs. And that certainly is applicable to consideration of the high mortality rate we have had in place for children. Don't we need to really meet those needs and, you know, help those families be able to provide the support so that these children can be raised safely?
Well, here in Kent now, what we've tried to do is, becoming aware of the situation, we pull together what they call stakeholders. It's a little bit of a chamber of commerce function, but having been on that board at one time. But, you know, in this kind of situation, the stakeholders are groups like the school districts, the cabinet workers who work with these kids, the mental health providers who will provide the services for these kids, some of our private mental health providers that are in the community. And here in Kentucky, we have what are called court-designated workers, which are employees of the court system, but they're a line of defense before going into court, and they meet with families and try to resolve issues prior to taking youth to court. So we brought them together, and we've enlisted a former district judge who did these kind of cases, who's now the legal counsel for our large state university in our community, Northern Kentucky University, to lead the effort to look now again, kind of go back to base zero, and how are we looking at these kids? How are we handling them? Are we using the right approach? What type of things can be done so that we don't bring them to court? Because data says, in truth, the minute you walk them into a courtroom, it's a failure, because the statistics say the outcomes will not be that good. You know, we think the reverse with adults sometimes. By bringing them into court, we can change behavior and the outcome will be good. It's not the same for kids. I'm not sure why that is, but that is the way it is. Now, one of the things Judge Buschelman and I discovered early on was our predecessors, the district judges, had every truancy case, for example, brought immediately to court. So we stopped that, and required them all to go into diversion and go through the CDWs first. That whacked down somewhat the number of cases. Now, understanding the problem, school districts are looking at more things. For instance, in Kenton has either one or maybe even two now, full-time social workers. And when they become aware of a problem with a student, they send a social worker out to the house and they start drilling down what's really going on. It's very rare that I get and it's been a while now, that I get a truancy petition from Kenton. I get some, but not many. What I will get from Kenton a lot are neglect petitions, either about school attendance or they've uncovered several issues about the child, or a dependency petition because they've uncovered this child is mentally ill, needs services, the parents don't have any health insurance, they're incapable of on their own getting that child the treatment that's needed. So, in fact, we looked at one this morning very much like that. So, you know, those kind of things, hopefully we're on the right track about all that. But in our community, because we're in a recession, we could use a lot more, especially in the mental health treatment area. Our public provider is in overwhelm mode, and we just made changes to our Medicaid system, which has apparently put them in a larger overwhelm mode. And whereas we could have some private providers provide help with people with medical cards, I'm not aware of any private provider that'll today see a child on a medical card to provide mental health treatment. So our one provider, North Key, is in total overwhelmed mode. Because we're a large urban county.
Mm-hmm. So, Judge Mehling, now that Kent County has kind of taken initiative and developed this committee to look at the problem of detaining status offenders, do you have a sense of what the community reaction has been at large? Have you received any objections to this movement?
I haven't received any objections. I do think that the concern in the end will be, when we get to the end, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, for instance, and I continue talking about truancy because that's the biggest part of status offender cases. The school districts, because their financial ability to function depend on school attendance, are concerned that we have something in place in which we can achieve the highest student attendance possible. Because the state really gears the money a district gets on per pupil attendance. So they certainly want to see to it that we come to an outcome that it will achieve maximum student attendance in school. And, I mean, Judge Bushman and I are just as concerned for a lot of reasons. Because we see them when we get our child support cases and we bring parents in who don't pay child support on their own kids and we discover they don't even have a high school education and therefore can't get a job because they're non-competitive in our job market, well, we're really paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Rebecca, nationally, do you have thoughts on any examples of how other communities have been able to address both the resource issue, concerns about the economy and whether or not a community can fund alternatives to detention?
Well, I think it is really the strategy that is being used here has been used across the country to try to focus intelligently on kind of reframing how we treat children in the juvenile justice system. And as indicated earlier, the Reclaiming Our Futures model and the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative approach and Judge Teske's approach really all revolve around the idea of bringing everybody to the table who is provides a measure of resources for these children and these families, and determine how to do that more effectively. And as Secretary Brown, you know, has said, the necessity to redirect the dollars appropriately. In the same manner, if you look in Kentucky at the Pew Foundation and the study they did with respect to adult offenders and making sure that, you know, the money we use is used most effectively. You could look at Right on Crime and their approach. They also are looking at the juvenile justice arena and saying we do not need to incarcerate for children those children who've committed an offense that is not a crime. If not even is it not violent, it's not a crime if they were an adult. They don't need to be incarcerated in our juvenile detention facilities.
Great. And let's talk a little bit about, shift gears and talk a little bit about statewide reform efforts. I think they've been alluded to earlier, but Rebecca or Tara, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. As I referenced earlier, the Blueprint for Kentucky's Children has adopted reducing the detention of status offenders as one of the key policy areas. And as we discussed before, it was because Kentucky was out of line. I think, you know, out of all of the states in our country, two-thirds of the status offenders who are detained in the nation are detained here in Kentucky, also in Texas and Washington. So those three states alone make up two-thirds of the status detentions. So as a blueprint, what we have been looking at are a couple of key pieces. We want to make sure that communities and courts have exhausted every option for helping the children prior to turning to detention. And this is exactly what Judge Mayling has been doing here in his court by looking at underlying mental health issues that may be contributing to truancy or whatever the misbehavior was. We also have been working to make sure that judges have all the facts about a child's situation and what options exist as alternatives to detention. So if a charge is filed, we want to ensure that the judge has the information about what interventions have been tried already before that charge comes into the court system. And another piece that we've been looking at is putting some reasonable time limits on how long a valid court order stays in place. As we've talked a little bit about the court orders that are put into place after a child comes into the court system. And we know of cases where a child may come before a judge for truancy issues and a court order is put into place. They may have behavior that follows those orders for 2 years, and then something may happen. In one case that we are aware of, a child had a mental health issue and was doing well and was following those orders, but had a relapse with a mental health issue and had trouble attending school again a couple of years later, and the child was picked up and detained at that point. So, you know, looking at the court orders, maybe having them in place for a set amount of time, if they need to be reinstated by the judge or have new orders put in place, that might be appropriate, but not having them last for a number of years. For example, if a child comes in at age 14, not having that last until the child turns 18. So those are key components to what we've been looking at in terms of legislative changes.
In addition, the Kentucky Supreme Court instituted new family court rules, and some of those rules were particularly focused on the question of status offenders in court in two areas, one being special education, to ensure that those children who were entitled to protections under state and federal law for intervention for education, that happened, and that the court-designated worker, you know, screened for that. Secondly, for those children charged with beyond control of parents, that the court-designated worker examined what interventions had been already considered, whether there ought to be a referral to comp care like North Key for counseling before we burden the courts with those cases prematurely.
Great. To touch base on some current events, just a week ago here in Covington, Kent County, the city passed an ordinance that created a curfew for youth that makes it a Class B misdemeanor for youth to be out of school during school hours. Do you have any thoughts about how this might affect the reform efforts that are occurring at the same time?
I'm not. I haven't read the ordinance itself. As I understand it, the idea behind it is that when law enforcement encounter individuals who are of an age that they clearly ought to be in school, and they're not in school during the school hours, they're going to have the ability to take them to a location to try to determine why they're not in school. Having already talked about the importance of education, I'm in favor of any technique that's going to get a kid into school. So, and I can tell you from having gone to several neighborhood meetings when I ran for judge and since I've been a judge, this has been a concern of people in the community because I've heard them say to me, I don't understand. I see this kid running around in the middle of the day and they ought to be at school. There was a concern raised, I know, by families that homeschooled. Apparently that was resolved or there's some things put in place about that. But I agree that I think anything that will help ensuring that children are in school, I think is a good idea.
Okay. From a legal perspective, as an advocate for children, my concerns would be that the ordinance as written, which creates a Class B misdemeanor for these children, is turning a status offense into a public offense, which would violate the juvenile code, that KRS 159 and really 157 through 159 already address how we are to treat children who are truant. And the director of pupil personnel is the one configured in state law to go and address those issues of children that are on the streets. Police officers who think children are committing offenses or you know are out, they can certainly encounter and question those children without an ordinance like this on the books. But my concern is it violates a KRS, I believe it's 82, which is a statute which limits what a municipality can do when you have a state statute that it encompasses the area. And the juvenile code and the education law pieces in 159 address this area of the law. So from that standpoint, I don't think it's a constitutional approach. Mm-hmm. But I don't deny that. You know, I understand the interest the community has to address it. If you were to look at some of the national organizations that have concerns about this type of ordinance, they speak about a concern that there would be disparity in terms of who is picked up. And as the judge indicated, there's some concerns about homeschooled children and parochial school children who have a different schedule. So who are the police going to encounter?
Mm-hmm.
I
think there's definitely, you know, some conflict that will need to be resolved between the ordinance and I think what the Status Offender Reform Committee is trying to accomplish. But luckily, since Judge Mayling has taken initiative in pulling together a group of stakeholders, I think that's the benefit of having everybody at the table already to be able to discuss how this might affect the initiative and what all can be done to resolve it. So thank you. So do you all have any suggestions for practitioners that represent youth charged with status offenders? What can they be doing to give the judges more information, or what can they be doing just as advocates for the youth in investigation or otherwise to reduce the detention of status offenders?
Well, every student or child has a right to a lawyer. In fact, one of the good things our family court rules required is that every status offender, upon being arraigned, to be advised of their rights, and they literally have written out what is to be said. And included in that is they have the right to an attorney, which, because I've yet to meet a millionaire under 18 child, means that every one of them is appointed a public defender. So we do a good job in the Commonwealth of giving every child a lawyer, and they're aggressively represented. So I've not had, and I don't think I've ever had a status offender yet who's been privately represented. I've had some parents come with attorneys for themselves that they have hired and paid, but I've not had yet a retained attorney for a status offender. So one of the things I've seen more and more of, when there is a real suspicion that the child is mentally ill, is a Chapter 32 request for some funding to have the child examined by a psychiatrist or psychologist to see if they're competent to stand trial, because status offense is a quasi-criminal matter in the sense that they're found guilty, not guilty, and they have to understand the charges and have the ability, for instance, that, you know, they're not going to school because they intend not to go to school. And I've had some kids who, it turns out, they are, there's such such degree of mental illness that I've ended up dismissing the matter because they don't have the competency to stand trial. That also ends up, though, that examination or review ends up with, because that's then going to be converted to a dependency case. It's just not going to be gone. And that psychiatric workup becomes a valuable tool for the cabinet in the dependency case of trying to figure out, does this child need residential treatment? Where should we place the child? What do we need to do now? So we end up getting, it's a very worthwhile piece of data that we get about a child.
And that's one of the things that, if you were to look nationally, Kay Templin, who is on a national organization put together by the Office for Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention and the National Coalition for Juvenile Justice, one of the things she always highlights is the need for an assessment, you know, before you make a decision about what to do, to have that assessment. And as Judge Madling indicated, that psychiatric workup done in the arena really of juvenile justice, addressing whether or not this child's a competent status offender, it can continue to serve the system, the court system, in terms of how best to help that child. So it is a very useful tool. And in contrast, what we have seen historically with the incarceration of children in the detention centers is that that kind of workup does not routinely happen if what we are seeing as the solution is simply detention. Then that kind of assessment doesn't happen. So the more we can make that happen for these children, so we make intelligent decisions that meet their treatment needs and allow them to succeed, that is, you know, the point of juvenile court, is rehabilitation. I mean, that, because children are not entitled to a jury trial, they're not entitled, as you indicated, judge, to bail in the juvenile arena, and those things they're not given. In contrast, what the state is supposed to do, acting as parent, is to bring to bear resources that will help that family and that child.
I was going to add, beyond suggestions for practitioners who represent youth, looking beyond to community members, one thing to look at is how county funds are being used and if there are options for redirecting those funds. I know a number of fiscal courts across the state have looked at the amount of money that they are having to spend on the detention of youth for status offenses, and they have contributed some of their funding to programs that can serve youth in different ways. You know, currently here in Kentucky, the cost of detaining a child for one day in a youth detention facility is $210. The county is billed $94 per day that a status offender is put in a detention center. And as in addition to that cost, they have to pay the cost to transport the child to the detention center. And here in Kentucky, we have regional detention centers. So from Oldham County, for example, the youth are transported by the sheriff's office to Campbell County to be detained. And, you know, that can add up. In fiscal year 2010, counties paid just shy of $1 million for the detention of status offenders across the state for just 12 months. And so, as I said, some fiscal courts have said, rather than spending the money for detention, we'll invest a small amount in a service here locally that can serve the child in a different way. Rebecca mentioned Kay Templin, and she served for a number of years as the executive director at Gateway. And there, they are able to take in, they have a track record of over 20 years of taking in youth who are running away and keeping them safely in a non-secure facility. And that is something that many other counties could probably benefit from having, is a facility like that where the child who has run away isn't placed in a facility with children who have committed serious offenses, mm-hmm. but is still held in a safe place and is, you know, begins that process of looking at assessing the child and seeing what underlying factors there are there that need to be addressed.
And to think, you know, that's in Mount Sterling, Gateway is. So that they have had that track record. I began as a trial attorney for kids in 1985, and the children I represented would often go to Gateway, and they took their shoes with the way they and they certainly encompassed them in services and such that, you know, no child from there ran. And I certainly had a number of children from Eastern Kentucky who were runaways who went to that facility and came back to court when they were to, you know, come back to court, and they received a full assessment while they were there. So that place works. Let's look at it and consider where we can duplicate it around the state.
Sure. I mean, I think I'm hearing from all three of you that it really it's a matter of redirecting the dollars in a way that is more effective than the way that we've been doing it now or we have in the past.
Yes, I think Judge Mayling gets credit here for being a wise, overseeing the taxpayer dollars wisely, because he really is looking at using resources that are more effective and are going to have better outcomes for those youth. They're going to be much more likely to become contributing members of our society than they would be if they were simply being sent to the detention facility.
Well, and Judge Bushman gets just as much credit, because the two of us are the family court judges, and we together are working on this program. So,
well, we are running short on time. We've got about 5 minutes left. So, really quickly, Judge Mayling, do you have any advice for juvenile or family court judges that are looking at this issue in their own counties? Where should they start?
Well, I suggest they start where I started, which is to start looking at every case, and when you're asked to detain a status offender, to drill down in that file and take a look at what is going on. Were there indications of mental health issues? Were there indications there was something wrong in the family home setting? Why is the child acting in the manner that they have? Did people follow up? Because on all these cases we're talking about, they've already been in court, there's court orders, there's been a disposition, there was a plan laid out. Did people do their part in a plan? You know, if the plan was get mental health treatment, did they get the mental health treatment? Because a lot of times you start finding out they did. Random drug tests were ordered. Did anybody get drug tests? You know, were they all negative? Were they positive? Do we have a child that's got a problem, an addiction issue or whatever? Was the house cleaned up? Have the parents been more proactive? What has been their involvement with the school district since court?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to look at all those things, because usually I wish everything in life would be simple. But life has taught me a lot of things that turns out are kind of complicated. So, and if it's a complicated problem, it needs a multifaceted answer, not a simple just go pick this child up and lock them up for a night. That's not going to fix anything.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you all for being on the show, and thank you guests for tuning in. If you're interested in learning more about status offender issues, we will post more resources about the reform And it will be available on our website at www.childrenslawky.org. Thank you all very much, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you think we got it?